Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 122 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So, announcements this week.
Or you could say the announcement this week.
The biggest announcement this week. There was lots of Outlander offerings this week. There have been for the last, 10 days or so? I mean,
since the beginning of December.
It was 25 days.
Yeah.
So it's been, today's the 16th? Today's like I'm so out of time.
Today's the 20th.
Is it? Oh my gosh, it's that close to Christmas. Okay. So today's the 20th. So they've had 20 offerings. And I would say that after the teaser trailer, this has been the biggest offering they've had so far.
I think this is the biggest thing they've had since the end of season one. The teaser trailer was nice, but everybody wanted Roger.
I mean, everyone still wants Roger.
Now they just want now. Now they want a specific Roger. Now they want to Roger.
Good Lord. So,
who is it, girl? What's up?
It was announced this week that Mr. Richard Rankin, a Glaswegian of... He's actually quite well known, actually, right now in Scotland. His career is on the up and up. He's been in a lot of BBC productions. He has been cast as our Roger.
Roger Wakefield Mackenzie.
That's the one. You could have seen him in The Syndicate, the series 3 of The Syndicate. He is in that. He was just in From Darkness on BBC.
Something on NBC. What was it?
American Odyssey.
American Odyssey. Uh-huh.
And he was also in...
Played an American, I think, in American Odyssey.
He did. And he was also featured quite heavily in The Crimson Field, which was an ensemble cast.
Which people are so disappointed was not continued.
It was sad because it was not finished. It was
the story was just not done.
The story was built to be several seasons long and it did not make it past the first season. So sadly, we have no resolution to any of the stories.
So let's talk about Bree.
There is no Bree.
And that's all we can say.
That's all we have right now. But I hear, she's in the works. We should...
Well, I mean, Roger and Bree have been in the works since season 2 was greenlit. But yeah, so we're waiting for Bree. And what's the other one? What do we have left? There are 3 things left, and there probably could be more. But the 3 things that everyone keeps talking about are Bree, season 2 premiere date,
and season 3 pickup.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Yes. That's it. Thank you. Yes.
So let's make it a Merry Christmas, Stars, shall we? Give us all what we want.
So that's kind of the announcements this week, correct?
I believe that is the announcements this week.
And since this is like an in-betweener week, right, between our read-alongs, we are featuring an actual Scottish guest again. Who are we featuring this week? Who are we interviewing?
Siobhan Mackenzie.
And who is Siobhan Mackenzie?
She is a kilt designer.
She's a fashion designer.
Who specializes in kilts.
Who is... known for her kilts and for kind of revolutionizing the kilt. And you'll hear all about that in our interview.
We would like to welcome fashion and kilt designer Siobhan Mackenzie to the Outlander podcast. Siobhan, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
We are very well here on this Sunday, and thank you so much for joining us. We understand you are a busy little bee, as ever.
Yes.
Never cease designing.
Absolutely not. A 7 days a week job it is.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so before we get to where you are and what you do now, let's find out a little bit more about you. How did you get started in or interested in design and fashion?
So I'm from the Highlands of Scotland. I'm from a very small village. And since the age of 10, I wanted to be a fashion designer. and seemed like a huge dream for someone from such a small place. But this is what I wanted to do, and I never changed my mind. So when I was 13 years old, I learned to sew. And when I was 17, I moved 4 hours to a city called Glasgow in Scotland, where I started my degree in fashion design.
What were some of your early influences? What was your childhood like that you think may have influenced you?
Well, my great granny used to sew these most amazing sequin patterns onto all of her jumpers, and I just found it so interesting. I used to watch her in awe. She used to just sew the most stunning patterns onto all of her clothes, and she was so creative like that. So I think that inspired me to start sewing.
So when you made the decision to move to Glasgow, is there more than one fashion design school there?
Yes, there's various in Scotland. There's a few different options, and I'd applied for various places. And where I did go, I just knew when I went in and when I met the head lecturer, I just had this feeling of where I sort of belonged there. And I just had this really strong feeling towards it. I wanted to go there and I wanted to get in. So I was absolutely delighted when I did.
What kind of classes would you have at design school? I mean, is it all design-oriented classes? Are there any kind of maths or, you know, English, or is it just purely?
So we had advanced fashion design. We had something called pattern construction, which is how your garment would come together. That's sort of a lot of maths and a lot of accuracy. So if you think about it, it's going to be a flat pattern. How you cut that shape of that fabric to make it into something is something you need to think about and you need to know how to do. And we would have advanced sewing. So we had to sew it all. We had to make it all ourselves. We had business enterprise. We had lots of different things, fashion merchandising. We sort of covered a really wide range of fashion.
What were some of your favorite parts of school? And how long was the program?
I was there for 4 years. My favorite parts were meeting all the people on the course, because it was such an intense course. We were there working so hard, and I've made some of the best friends I could have ever asked for through it. And although we finished and graduated last year, still talk to most of the girls on a daily basis. So yeah, it's probably the friends I've made from it, really.
Have you had a chance to meet people from fashion from all over the world?
Yeah, I have. I've met various people in different events. Probably quite hard to sort of think of everyone right now. But yeah, I mean, networking is such a huge part of it, about getting yourself out there, getting your work known and meeting the right connections.
So when you were inspired to study design, was the kilt foremost in your mind, or were you just interested in beautiful garments?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been creative. I've always loved art, and it was just something within me. And the kilt thing sort of just happened, because when you're in your final year doing a fashion design degree, you have something called a graduate collection. So I decided that I would look into my Highland roots and the history behind my clan, Mackenzie. And as a graduate collection, you want to create something avant-garde, something that's not been done before, and really use innovation. So I did an internship alongside Scotland's master kilt maker, where I learned traditional kilt making first. And from there, began experimenting really with how I could put a 21st century spin on it. And so I put that out on display, and there was this sort of overwhelming demand of, I designed this product, people wanted it. And so it really happened, because I don't think I realized what I'd created until I'd done it, of how revolutionary it was that no one had done this really before to such a level.
I think some people, when they say, oh, I design kilts, they think, oh, well, she picks patterns or she picks fabric.
But she just makes
right.
kilts.
But you clearly do much more than that.
Yes. I mean, when you think of a kilt, you think of the traditional kilt, because most people have never seen it presented any other way until my kilts have come along. So I contrast various textures together within the one kilt. For example, my pleats can alternate from tartan to tweed, tartan to tweed, and really there's endless possibilities with what I can do with the kilt. And the fact that I studied traditional kilt making first, and I know all that craft that goes into it, is how it comes across in a quality product, because I can use not only my design skills but my manufacture skills to really pull it together into something that is a quality luxury product. And it stands out against any kilt as you would ever know it before, because it's so visually distinctive.
Some of these kilts are they're couture. Like, these are like super, super, like, amazingly designed kilts. Like, the patterns that you've gotten in them.
Thank you.
In the fabric is amazing. Yeah,
it's a lot of work. It's very time intensive, but it pays off into a product that is really the sort of signature style. And with all my clients, I design something just for them, so they know they're going to walk out in their kilts and nobody else has got that. So it's great.
We're looking right now at the Clan Mackenzie graduate collection that you just described. And I mean, it's gorgeous, specifically what you were talking about, the alternating pleats. Oh my gosh, I've never seen that elsewhere.
Yeah.
I've never seen that. Was that your creation?
Yeah. So, as I say, you would think of the kilt as a traditional piece, all the one fabric, all the one tartan. So it was a lot of experimenting with what we could do to reinvent it. So yeah, we can put two fabrics in. I've got some triple contrast kilts where I've got three different fabrics within it, and it just creates such a visually impacting piece.
Absolutely. And the ones that are particularly stunning are the rear shots. I know that sounds... No, the shots from behind, because that's where the pleat comes
most
through.
Most of the work is, yes. Most of the work is in the backs of the kilt. So, I mean, you could have it looking fairly traditional from the front, and then actually when the wearer turns around, it's just such a shock. I mean, I love to see people's reactions. Their jaws hit the floor because they're just not expecting what they're going to see.
Now, what is the piece, since we do not have the vocabulary as designers or kilt makers or kilt enthusiasts, really, except that we really appreciate a kilt. Okay, so at least what we're seeing now in the graduate collection is the those alternating pleats, correct, in the back?
Yes.
So just above the pleats, like at the waist, what is that piece? It looks like it's a little thicker.
Is that in the gents?
Yes.
Is it just a belt?
Yeah, it might be a belt, because it looks like...
Yeah, that'll be what it is. It's a leather belt.
What we see is the kilt that is peeking through, or I should say the pattern that's peeking through, is picked up on the belt. And this is from the rear again. Picked up on the belt with a small space between those two pieces. And I was just curious about what that was. So that would make sense that it would be a belt if it's around the waist.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's really interesting because you think the kilt has been around for so long, and it seemed like until this, like the only real improvement you've seen is, oh, I'm going to sew the pleats in, or I'll make it a little shorter, but it's all pretty much been standard, like the same thing. It's the same kind of a kilt. So this is really interesting that it's the biggest step forward, I guess, in kilt making that I've seen.
Absolutely. And actually, I was quite nervous to put it out there, because when you're changing something so traditional, you can be playing with fire. So I was really naive as to how much people would really like it, because I thought, I'm completely breaking all the rules here. I'm putting fabrics together, and the kilt's always just been one fabric. So yeah, I guess I was quite naive as to what people's reaction were going to be, a little bit skeptical whether they would like it. So I've been really, really fortunate that the majority of my feedback is great and people really like what I'm doing. So,
but be honest, if you hadn't been that naive, would you have done it?
I'm not sure. I think you've got to be prepared to step outside of the lines. And I think as a designer, if you stayed within what people are used to, you're not really going to make a name for yourself. You're not going to be anything innovative. So you've got to have that bravery almost just to go for it and sort of not worry about what people are going to say, because that's your style. And if you think to Vivienne Westwood, for example, she was laughed at when she first started out, and people thought her style was so crazy and so wacky, and look at her now. So you've got to have that, like, no fear, just going for it and just believing in your design and what's inside your mind. So that's sort of what I've used.
Now, in the same collection, at least on the pieces that we're seeing here, there are two images of a woman in that amazingly huge dress.
Lord,
it is gorgeous.
How many yards of fabric is in that skirt?
So just in the skirt, there's 10 meters of silk. So it's huge. And it's amazing when there's any wind that goes under it. It flies right out. So any models that have had it on just feel like a Scottish princess who never wants to take it off.
In the first image we see, and for those of you listening to this, if you go to SiobhanMackenzie.com and click on Gallery and then select the Clan Mackenzie Graduate Collection, on the very bottom
row of three. The middle and far right are of the woman. I mean, you'll see. It's the only two of woman in a dress. But I think it's very interesting. So you have, it was a very clever choice of positioning and placement of the model with the dress, because you have, as you've already said, this is still, it's not a kilt, but this is still a twist on tradition. This huge dress supporting, and it's very flattering of the pattern, of the beauty of the place, of the material and the model. But to put this model in this dress, in this room, in front of those pictures, it's a beautiful juxtaposition.
Thank you. Yes, I mean, dresses, I know, are so far off kilts, but that's also been another passion of mine, couture dresses, and it's something I would branch off into once all the kilts and everything are established. I'd have a separate line of dresses, because it's just always been a passion of mine, is couture dresses. So I thought in my graduate collection, do I go menswear? Do I do women's wear? And then I thought, well, do you know what? I can do both. I have the capability to do both, so I'll do both. So that's sort of why there's women's and men's within that.
What was your thought, or how did you decide to have at least the two settings that we see? Likely, you know, when you come down to the photos that are selected, many, 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 many are discarded or simply not included for time, or to keep it short, right, for brevity. How did you select your locations for shooting, especially the dress, and what shots may not, or locations may not have made it into this collection on the website, at least?
So this photo shoot is in a castle called Alduri Castle, and it's on the banks of Loch Ness. So because I'm from the Highlands, my whole family's from the Highlands, the whole inspiration behind the collection is from the Highlands, it made sense to take the collection home to the Highlands. So we shot it at Loch Ness, on the banks of Loch Ness, and the castle is actually situated there. And if you look it up, it's the most amazing enchanted castle. It's beautiful. So we just knew that we had to use that castle, and they were great. They let us use inside the castle, outside. So it was really, really fantastic to shoot there.
So that must have been kind of a, even though it was your graduate collection, it must have felt something like a homecoming, because here you are showing the world what you've done. Now you kind of burst out, and the first thing you have that to show the world is so connected, so rich in, so connected to your history and the history of Scotland.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it means so much to me, because it's so personal, and I have a huge, huge family. So although I live quite far away from them, it's quite nice to involve them into my work and use them as my inspiration. So it just means a lot to me, that collection and my work going forward, because I know that's how it all started, was with that collection. That's how my whole business evolved. So it's got such a personal meaning to it.
Okay, let's speak about your ladies' bespoke kilts.
Sure.
First of all, what does bespoke mean? I'm seeing that word a lot more recently, and I'm not quite sure what it means.
So a bespoke piece is a one-off. It's made specifically for an individual. So it's not a mass-produced item or as such. It's designed specifically for a client or a person, and that's something unique.
That makes sense.
So something in, and this is also, again, on your website, we're looking at the shots for the ladies' bespoke kilts. And what is interesting, besides, of course, it being a woman in a kilt, is the pairing that you have, the fact that a woman's wearing it, the way the kilt looks, and then your choice of whether it's the corset or the shirt, the blouse that's put over it, or the jacket. How did you decide, number one, how to design a kilt for a woman? What went into that? And number two, how did you decide to style these?
It also started when I did all the dense kilts as my graduate collection, and then I thought, I really need to be wearing some of these myself to be self-promotion off the brand. So I made some up, and for the shoot, we wanted to sort of keep the emphasis on the kilt, which is why we've paired it with corsets. So we keep an emphasis on the kilts and with some nice accompanying head pieces, really just to keep it all about the kilt and keep the rest sort of simplistic but elegant.
And kudos for being able to make women's kilts that do not look like schoolgirl uniforms, which I think is a lot of times you see the most time you'll ever see like women in tartan. It's mostly like Catholic schoolgirls.
Yes.
So these actually look like kilts, like they've got the hardware and everything that you would find in an actual men's kilt.
Absolutely. And the beauty of them being bespoke is that I can make them to any length that the customer feels comfortable with. As you're saying, the schoolgirl ones can tend to be very short and not really very practical. So I personally prefer my kilt to be a bit longer because when I'm working and you're moving and standing up and down, and you know, so I like it to be a bit longer for practical reasons. But that's the beauty of it being bespoke, is that I make it exactly to the customer's preference.
So do you wear a kilt daily?
Yes, I wear my kilts pretty much every day. And it's great because I can dress them up or dress them down. So if I'm going to an event, I can put on a nice pair of heels and a nice top, or I can dress it down, with, especially with the weather in Scotland, I can wear a nice wool jumper and long boots. And they're just so versatile.
Okay, I got to talk about this Greyfriars collection.
Yes.
Everything we've seen on your site, of course, is beautiful. This is another example of that, one of your large flowy dresses. It is,
yes,
it is stunning. How did you get this shot? And of course, I'm talking about the one in the upper left, which is the, oh my goodness.
So we got this shot. It was, you can actually, if you look close enough at the dress, you can see some raindrops. It was pouring rain in Scotland. And we had some very quick photography where I had to lift the dress up and drop it as the shot was taken. So we had a few goes of it where I had to hold the dress, and then as the photographer was ready to take it, I would let it go.
Oh, I mean, this, along with the other ones we saw from the graduate collection, whenever I see, and I know I've seen this in some of your shots, was this dress or some version of it used in your runway show?
Yes, this was in one of my runway shows, yeah.
Because if I remember correctly, I've seen in your social media when I checked out some of, and you had a video, I believe, too. And
yes.
I saw this dress and I thought, holy moly, I have to go, you know, look at her site to see what this is, to look more into it. And
yeah.
To see it in motion is magic. So
yeah.
It's a way that I certainly personally never would have thought that you could have whimsy with kilts. Or
yes.
Whimsy, and granted, this is not a kilt, but this whole collection is whimsical.
Yeah, I mean, the Greyfriars one is slightly more avant-garde, and the whole one behind this was, it was an award called the Greyfriars Award, and it was open worldwide, and I won it. So I had to create something really out there to stand out on the catwalk. So that's how we've actually got lace and velvet within these kilts. So it's not something you typically associate with a gent's kilt. But if you look very closely, you'll notice that it's lace overlaid velvet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the black?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and I just happened to pull up the photo that had what you're talking about before I knew what you were talking about. Because I was I was looking at that sporran. That sporran.
Yes.
Oh my, do you design sporrans as well?
No, so I work very closely with a very talented sporran maker in Scotland who sort of understands my concept and sort of on the same wavelength. So he works with me on that. So it's really great to meet someone who has that creative ability.
In this collection, I love, of course, all of the big dresses are just gorgeous. But in the Greyfriars, I especially like the woman's kilt with the instead of having alternating tartans, right? It's alternating tartan and then the black. And
yes, so that's black velvet and the tartan. So makes a really luxurious contrast.
And is she carrying, is it a version of a sporran or is it just...
Yeah, so it's a little handbag, so a lady's handbag. And I mean, you can't really see it on these images, but they've even got the Mackenzie stag head on them. So with me, I like to put all the little details really, really matter. So I've got the Mackenzie stag head within my logo and it's all in the branding. So we have that on the sporrans and on the little bags. We've got the stag head there.
So tell us about your work on the runway. How did you get involved with it? Is it something that is required as a fashion design major?
We did a graduate catwalk show within our degree, and we had experience of doing those every year. So that was great event planning experience where we learned how to put together a fashion show and what was required of that. most recently in August, I did a catwalk show at the Clan Mackenzie International Gathering. So that was a full Siobhan Mackenzie catwalk show, and it was my first one on my own because up to that I'd always done it as part of my degree and so on. And there I've been in various shows, but I've never had a full show that was just my own. So myself and my team put it together, along with the help from the Clan Mackenzie Society, and that was just, it was fantastic. I had some great, was sponsored by Johnson's of Elgin with some great cloth there, and we used the special edition Clan Mackenzie 78 Highlander tartan, which is an exclusive tartan, so we got to make some really great pieces and have an amazing show, and I met lots of international customers there. So it was really, really, really great platform for me.
So on your website, you also list a number of achievements, and you've spoken about the Greyfriars Award. You list quite a bit, especially for someone who is so new, so newly out of school. What has been, thus far in your young career, what have you been most proud of achieving?
There's been so many awards and so on that I've achieved within a year of graduating. But I would say last December was Miss World, a design for Miss Scotland, and that was televised worldwide on E. So to see my own designs on stage a few months after graduating was really surreal, and it was amazing to have been given that opportunity and that belief in me. And that's led to me being able to design again this year for Miss Scotland. So Miss World's on at the moment, and the final's going to be in a few weeks in China. So, I mean, that's just incredible opportunities that I could have only dreamt of.
So we go from the lovely world of Scottish fashion design and kilts to our favorite series, Outlander.
Yes.
The first question, of course, is have you read at least the first book?
Unfortunately, I've not read the books. I was quite oblivious to Outlander, and I actually created my sort of weathered looking kilt, again, oblivious to what Outlander was, and I stumbled across it and I thought, oh my gosh, this is so apt. And I looked more into it, and my clan Castle Loud is, I think, what actually inspired the writer for the castle in the series. So there was quite a link there, and with the Clan Mackenzie and so on. So sort of caught up in the series, but I've not read the books yet, but I would like to. But as I say, I work 7 days a week. So when you're running your own company, it's very hard to find some spare time.
Well, I would imagine that all of Scotland is really feeling what we call the Outlander effect.
Yes.
Whereas previous to this, I think probably, and clearly previous to your designs, kilts were mostly seen in weddings, and people would, you know, rent them for, you know, formal occasions. But I think that now they're becoming more of an everyday wearable. So it's not something that's just reserved for formal occasions anymore.
Absolutely. There's so much, especially with what I'm doing with them, that can really, really revolutionize them and make them more a fashion item rather than the traditional wedding gear.
Outside of fashion and design, although it sounds like since you're busy 7 days a week, there's not really a lot of time outside of that. But what are some, to keep yourself balanced, right? Because you're doing so much, you are your business, you're there for your business. What do you like to do? What other interests do you have outside of fashion and design?
So I'm a very keen baker. I love to bake. I also love to cook. So if I do have some spare time, I will probably be in the kitchen. So I'm pretty much a housewife. I sew, I bake, and I cook.
What are some of your upcoming projects, if you can? What you mentioned the Miss World again. What does 2016 look like?
So I'm hoping to collaborate with New York Tartan Week, as that's a really exciting opportunity, and I feel like North America and Canada and so on are really big markets for what I'm doing. So I really need to get myself out there and work on that. So I really hope to do some fun things with them and get the brand out there.
Well, that would be very exciting, because we know that there's going to be another Tartan Week parade in
yes.
New York. And yeah, we are excited for everyone who's going to be there, whether they march or not. Because it's the Tartan Day thing obviously is, it's growing, but it's very big, and New York is one of the hubs.
Yes, absolutely. And with my kilts being so distinctive, there's a lot we could do with that to make it really exciting.
So do you work primarily with traditional tartans, or do you ever design your own tartans?
Yeah, I do design my own, and I would like to move forward with ready-to-wear collections and so on in my own tartans. But again, just, you know, I'm only been in business about a year now, so there's all these things that I want to do and achieve, but I have to really be realistic and take it a step at a time. So a lot of my clients like to choose their tartan and so on, so I'll work with that and then put my 21st century spin on it. But I would be able to like to be able to offer all my own tartans in the future. Yeah.
So speaking of the clients you have now, the ones who come to you to ask for these bespoke items,
yeah,
do you have, is there such a thing as an average customer? Do you have a certain customer profile, or are they just extremely unique, each one?
Yeah, it can be a real mix. You know, there's not a specific age group. I mean, originally, I guess people sort of thought mine was aimed at the younger market, but it's really not necessarily. I've had people from all age ranges and from different careers and so on. So it's actually been quite hard to put a target profile on it because I've had such a mix of customer.
Does that then affect in any way your marketing? Because as you said, you have to wear your stuff. You are representing yourself and your business. But because your customers are from so many different backgrounds, is there a certain avenue that you rely on more than others?
And social media has been a really huge part, especially as a startup, because marketing costs can be so extortionate. And as a startup business, you just don't have that budget to play with. So when you can get your work on social media for free and people discovering you, it's really so beneficial. So that's been a really huge part for us is social media.
Now you said us. Who do you have, any little elves or helpers?
Yes. So I've had 3 interns so far, and I found studying in Scotland a fashion degree, there really weren't many opportunities. So for people who want to get involved in fashion, I'm so open to giving them as much experience as I can and helping with that. And I want to be able to change that and actually have jobs in fashion here in Scotland, because again, when I studied here, there was just such a lack of opportunities to gain your experience really in the field.
As young as you are, because of what you found before going to school, you're paying it forward because you want to make sure that others do.
Oh, absolutely, because I know when you're studying in Scotland and then when you apply for jobs after university and you're up against candidates who have maybe had internship after internship in London and you just don't have that same experience, it makes it really difficult for them to get a job. So if you can have worthwhile experience, then so beneficial to your CV.
Speaking of an internship.
What, are you going to ask for one?
No. No, I'm kind of stuck here on the West Coast for now of America. No, speaking of an internship or a kilt or wanting to find out more about you and maybe become a client, what is the best way for people to get in contact with you and where can they find your work?
So my website is probably the main point of contact, which is SiobhanMackenzie.com. We also are active on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So you can get in touch with us various ways on there. My email, my personal email address is on the website. So very easy to get in contact with, and I'm happy to discuss, you know, anything with any potential clients or whether they're interested in what I'm doing. I'm really happy to chat.
So let's say I've decided I really want, and I mean, I totally do, but let's just say for sake of argument that I've decided I would like a bespoke kilt. What kind of a process is it to go through that with you?
Well, if you're based in Scotland, I can meet with you individually, show you 3 different cloths, take your measurements, and then what I do is a CAD system where I do my designs, and that means I can email them directly to my customers. If you're international, we can Skype, we can discuss via email, whatever is really easiest. And again, with my CAD system, I can import my fabric to give a realistic render of the design, so I can send that between clients, just ping it an email. It's really quick and they can get a visual idea of what their bespoke design is going to look like.
It seems like you then are able to take domestic and international clients.
Yes, yeah. We have sold internationally so far, but I'm really looking to expand that, especially in America. I want to come and live there. So always keep it a made in Scotland product, but my dream is to live in New York. So here's hoping.
Oh my goodness. Well, I we're not in New York, but we've been there, and I know Summer and I both love it there. And yeah, as Americans, we can say we would welcome you. We would love to have you here in, not here in New York, but we'd love to have you in New York. That would be awesome.
Yes, thank you.
So are there any, like, what kind of patterns can you do with tilts, with kilts?
With tilts.
Tilts.
With tilted kilts.
Tilted kilts. And like on the background, like with the way that you've placed the tartan, have you ever made any, like, because one of them kind of almost looked like a saltier.
Yes. So what we do with that then is contrast two different tartans together, and up close, it doesn't really look like a saltire. And then the further you get away from it, it's so subtle, and it's amazing because, again, people don't realize that at first until they really look at it, and then they're like, wow, how did you do that? It's a lot of math, a lot of hard work, and a lot of patience that goes into creating that, but it's so worth it.
I imagine you're now making it okay to stare at men's bums and kilts again.
Yes, I know. I've got a very, very difficult job of working with all these male models.
As we close, now that you've broken down and put back together the kilt, you've torn it apart and brought it together to give it a 21st century spin of your own. What further things do you have planned, or are you interested in tweaking?
I think I'll just use the kilt as a starting point. So although it's getting very well known, the brand, there's still a lot of work to really, really break into the market someone to be in with that. And then from there, I can start to add lots of different product ranges to it, and use innovation to really bring more products to the range and expand the brand that way.
Well, you have been very successful thus far, and it looks like you have a very bright future ahead, and we look forward to watching your journey and seeing you become a household name, at least in the fashion world, and yeah, and ending up here in America. That would be tremendous. We would love to have you here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Real quick. So you said you're a Mackenzie, clearly. And you said you think that the books were based on your castle. Now, do you take ownership of this castle? Do you get to visit this castle? I mean, is it everyone that is a Mackenzie and with a last name?
So there's part of the Clan Mackenzie Society. So it's the clan chief that currently lives at the castle, and you can do tours there. And I've been very honored to work with the clan chief in the Clan Mackenzie International Gathering. And he, in fact, owns the Siobhan Mackenzie kilt. So we've brought the clan chief of Mackenzie into the 21st century too. So I've been very fortunate to meet the Clan Mackenzie Society and be able to work with them and allow them to help me strengthen my brand. So it makes perfect sense, even though I'm a young Mackenzie, I'm from the Highlands, for me to be working alongside them.
That's a pretty sweet Outlander connection there, I'm just going
to
say.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely, which is why I would love to be able to get involved in Outlander and even, you know, dress the stars in my style of kilts would be amazing. So that would be one of my goals for next year.
Oh, like for some premiere or something. Oh my gosh.
Yes, absolutely.
That would be a dream for you, obviously, but a dream for anyone to see that. Well, to see it.
Yeah.
To see it even.
Yes.
Well, I mean, that would get ultimate exposure.
Oh, my goodness. That would be, especially, well, for anyone at any point in their career, but especially someone so young and so new in their career, that would just be amazing.
Absolutely. I mean, the brand is so so relevant to Outlander when you really think about it, and with the connection with the Clan Mackenzie and the castle and so on, it's so relevant and it just fits so well.
I could imagine someone asking, so it, say they wore some of your stuff, I could imagine someone asking Graham McTavish, so Mr. McTavish, what are you wearing? Oh, I play Dougal Mackenzie and I'm wearing Mackenzie.
Yes, absolutely.
That would be the best soundbite ever. You have to put
that's the quote we're aiming for next year.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Well, Siobhan, thank you so much for joining us. It has been a blast chatting, and we can't wait to, as I said, follow you next year, follow and see what you do and see how your career grows and blossoms, and you coming to America, all of that. I think great things are in store for you. So we are very excited.
I hope so. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Have a great weekend.
You too.
So wasn't she just a doll. She was so sweet. And of course, as all of our guests are, very gracious to spend some of her weekend with us. And I loved hearing about how she came up, what she learned, how she learned, how she's so connected to her heritage, so much so that she wanted to connect and revolutionize the kilt, connect with her heritage through the kilt.
Well, and you think about it. I mean, I know we spoke about this in the interview, but it's been largely unchanged in the years since it was first introduced. So this is like the first real new thing other than like, you know, utility kilts or adding pockets or making them permanent, like sewn pleats. This is like the first big change I've seen in kilts in years. So it was really exciting to talk to her and hear all about that. And you do need to go to her website. We will link to it.
Oh, we'll link to all of her social media and her website and all of her social media presences. And with that, I think this closes out another episode.
This does. Join us next week when we will be discussing chapter...
We'll be returning to our read-along. We wish you and yours a very happy holiday, and we look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/Outlander Pod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at Outlander Pod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Outlander Pod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.